Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Risking Failure. Back for another week. I'm your host, Mick Dunn, and I'm here with my good friend, Mark Dobson. Mr. Dobson, it's July in Australia. Merry Christmas to you, buddy. How are you?
Mate, we're having Christmas in July tomorrow in the house. It looks like Santa's workshop. It is unbelievable. Totally taking things to another level just because we don't know how to do things in halves. So,
mate, I'm proud of you because it reminds me of that big event we ran, what, years ago? Goodness gracious, like 20 years ago now. But
yeah,
that big Christmas party at Crown Casino that we put together.
We turned Crown Palladium into Santa's workshop. It was epic.
It was a lot of fun. We got
things escalated because we put fake snow right around the walls and everything and ended up, the people wanted a fairly fun time, so we created one, but the people got out of control and turned into a snow fight. And styrene fight, really. And
that was
security was pissed.
Right.
We were in so much trouble.
To give a visual picture, these are packing peanuts, right? So I just remember we had the world's largest supply of packing peanuts, I think, in this room. I mean, there were kids shoveling them everywhere onto tables. It was just nuts. Packing peanuts, in fact, but
yeah, it got pretty crazy, and then we were there, and then the Crown Casino wouldn't lend us their cleaning gear, so we were like school kids when you're scraping stuff up off the floor as a kid, you know, when you're cleaning the classroom, and you get a ruler, like a 30-centimeter ruler, and you scratch it. So we're out scratching till nearly 5 a.m.
No, and you were 10. Yeah.
Meanwhile, we're loading up a truck of all the, because we had
truck runs going back and forth because we only rented one box truck. I mean,
it escalated. And so we've gone to a similar level of trouble. I've purchased a couple of extra 30-centimeter rulers for the cleanup. So that's Christmas in July. The reason we're doing it is because Brona's Irish and all her Irish friends, they, you know, it feels more like Christmas when it's cold. So they love it and they love it. And it is awesome. And everybody wears a really bad jumper and we do turkey. It's full on. And it's really fun to do Christmas twice a year, to be honest. So except we don't do presents. We do the Kris Kringle, but you don't actually give someone a present as such. So, but that's all going on. So, some good stuff to talk about, actually. I'm on a little bit of a roll. We're going overseas in a couple of, about 10 days. So, every time you're heading overseas, there's always that deadline of all the things you need to get finished off. So, I'm just pedaling like crazy. I've got lots of things to talk about because life's in a good flow patch.
Yeah, me too. I've been keeping some notes, actually, on... Well, just some thoughts in general. I have this just note folder I keep on my iPhone that sometimes will just remind me of things that might be interesting for us to talk about and just things I might want to revisit. Sometimes it might be a book or a concept or an idea. And just recently I was kind of scrolling through and noticed three or four times over this particular, I don't know if I want to call it a concept, but it's just been coming up. So I thought I'd share it and maybe we can explore it a little bit. If I'm honest with myself, it's actually something that comes up a lot for me, something I think about a lot in general. It's sort of tied to what I've begun to think about as freedom of ideas. So I think we like to think of ourselves as of course we have freedom to have our own ideas, but how invested we may get in an idea or in particular a belief system maybe, but just a belief about how things are. And the more invested you get in that, the more you are likely, I think, to defend it. As I've kind of done this self-accounting on that, I feel there's some areas of my life I try to look for, where have I over-invested in an idea where I've maybe been unwilling to be open to different options, right? So they could be on a really basic level, like a Ford man versus a Holden man or a, Chevy person. I'm Ford all the way through. And you just realize you've just, maybe, 30 years later, you realize, my gosh, I missed out on this opportunity to have, have this other experience. All right. So that's probably on what I would consider a superficial level. The extreme of that would be on a religious level. And then somewhere in the middle is what I consider to be things that we're always working on. And for me, they may be business, technologies, things that we get invested in, money-related things that whatever. It might be a house. It might be whatever. Like, the further you get into it, and money is a good representation of that, the more tied to it you get, and the less willing to hear feedback and different ideas you become. And so some of the notes I'd made to myself were things like that freedom of ideas and how much of our freedom gets impacted by past investment. So I was sort of interested in that relationship, right? And then, you know, like a few weeks later, it sort of showed back up again. In fact, the very first time this particular concept I jotted down was quite a few months ago, where I just made a note saying people changing their mind on something significant is really rare. And then it sort of transitioned into this like freedom of ideas. And most recently, I just stumbled on this TED talk that was actually addressing this. And it was titled, Why You Think You're Right, Even If You're Wrong. And it's by a lady named Julia Galef. Now, I haven't even actually watched it. I've read the transcript of it. And that was rather interesting. So I just sort of like put all of that in a little envelope and go, you know, there it is.
That's the show, folks. I think we've got that one sorted out nicely.
We do. Don't change your mind on anything, won't we?
It's interesting.
Should I get my iced coffee in my hand? I've got a little bit of...
We can all tell. Look at you. It's finally summer, so you start showing off. Oh, I've got my iced coffee. Yeah. Mick, you only got like 2 weeks of summer over there, so
yeah,
enjoy it while you can. in Australia, to bring you up to speed, all your American listeners and international listeners, because they're all around the world, you know, our friends in Russia, etc. Australian rules football started off with just having 12 teams, and the league's been expanding. And we're now in a position we've got 18 teams. Now, one of those teams is called GWS, the Greater Western... it's GWS, Greater Western Sydney, but their logo is a Giants, all right? They were talking about whether or not... they're always on the radio talking about, you know, whether fans are attending and do they like the football and what's it going to take to grow this new team, what's going to get people to buy in, are they emotionally connected to their team and all this kind of stuff. So this guy calls in and he said that he's a GWS fan and really basically the club had looked after his son with so well on so many occasions, and he had such access to the players that his son was absolutely sold, and as a result, he started to barrack for GWS as well. And they said, oh, who did you barrack for before? And he said, Collingwood. And they said, oh, you know, you can't have loved the club. He said, no, I did. And they said, no, you can't have. You can't have. And there's this sense with, especially with sporting teams, that once you're born, somebody puts a jumper on you, they give you a scarf, they give you a sweater and say, this is your team. And if you're really loyal, you're never going to leave that team. And you get a lot of grief before switching. And I used to give people grief. My mum switched from Melbourne to St Kilda, and I gave her such a hard time about it. And later in life, I switched from North Melbourne to Richmond.
Attaboy.
Yeah, a mix of Richmond person, everyone. And Dad had played one game for Richmond, so there was a history in the family. But Dad doesn't – he barracks for North Melbourne. The reason was I got disillusioned with what I was seeing at North Melbourne. But it's like, so when you said that attachment, it's like, it's people aren't even notice it's happening. But I couldn't believe that they weren't listening to this guy on the radio. He's saying, no, I loved them. I made a shift. And that was just, press the button, next caller. No, that's not possible. He couldn't possibly have loved them because that's not a real football follower. And if you think, you're in a religion. You say, yeah, I used to be, say, Lutheran, but I'm now Buddhist. They go, there'll be some people say, oh, you lost your way, you're gone, to justify the departure, or you weren't really ever Lutheran, but with the Jewish faith, though, it's like, well, you're either Jewish, you're in it, you know, like you're born into it. It's like a blood. So anyway, so that was one of the first things I thought of, which doesn't help if you do want to switch. I think, you know, the movie, American History X, which is an incredible film. It's got some pretty violent scenes. They're really confronting stuff, but it's fundamentally about a white supremacist who basically realizes that his line of thinking does not work. He ends up rock bottom and he realizes that everything he ever believed just is fundamentally dysfunctional, and he needs to go across and he starts to become a bridge and get his family out of the white supremacist movement. And I think that's what makes it such an incredible film, actually, is that he's letting go of something so big.
So that's interesting because... So what I like to explore is like what makes that happen for somebody, right? Like there's this, it seems like it's like this realization of something damaging or really confronting that makes somebody want to switch their idea, belief system, whatever it is. Then there's this other thing that for me is about community. And maybe that's peer pressure, but in reality, I don't know that I'd want to say it's peer pressure because I feel like people that are in a religion wouldn't say I'm in it because of peer pressure. But for me, the observation sometimes has been that there's such strong community that it is harder and hard. Like if you depart from it, you have to find a way to replace that. And if it's not there, I think subconsciously in a belief system, you can quite easily just sweep away the things that, you might just say, oh, that's the surface level stuff. It's not that big of an issue. The things that I'm iffy about. So if that's your football team and you've got an issue with the coaching staff, you know, whatever, or issue with in whatever this year, well, that's just the draft and we'll get by it. We always did. And what's more important that I'm able to hang out with my friends on Thursday night and watch the footy show, and Friday night we all hang out and watch footy together, like whatever. Like it feels like you wouldn't have that attachment as strongly, and obviously things like religion, I think that's huge.
You see that all the time. I've seen loads of, I've been to so many different churches of different faiths and talked to the people, and you can see there's some people that they don't really buy aspects of the religion. They feel like they belong to that community. There's one or two things that have been the hook. And they said, oh, if I have to have this line of thinking to be part of this community, then that's fine. But then, of course, they're not highly attached either at that point, are they? Because they can let go of that thinking easily. So, which is not quite the same what you're saying as when you're really heavily invested in an idea.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off a little bit there.
No, you didn't. I guess there are, you know, there's the element of being heavily invested. It is sort of an idea, but a belief system in general, and you know, business is the same. Where you know you're really heavily invested in a business and a particular outcome, and even though people might be telling you it's not working, you can push that aside and tell yourself that you don't understand or you don't see what I see. And this is the phenomenon that interests me. And I must be completely honest in saying it's probably religion that's brought it up the most for me, because I feel like I see this all the time. And I try not to be critical about it, but I feel like there's an element of like, I actually don't know how to engage with some people that I feel like are hook, line, and sinker into a particular religion. I was like, I don't know how to engage in a conversation, because I feel like even to try to engage on what I would like to explore and just have a conversation about would be so confronting that they'd just be dismissive of me. Or I feel really intimidated. There's going to be a really strong pushback and I'm going to get lectured. And so I just don't try. And I guess you could say that might be a similar feeling to somebody that has a relative that's heavily invested in a business, and you sort of want to tell them, hey, I think this isn't working out, but you just, people sit back and they don't say anything because they're too scared. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So yeah, 100%, 100%. I've got like a billion, not like a billion's a slight exaggeration. I have quite a few thoughts, like I've quite a few examples. So straight away, I know I'm in trouble for saying them. So, like, for example, you read Anthony Robbins' book on money, and he basically says the stock market trading system fundamentally, and the banking system is fundamentally designed to take money off you. You're not going to win that game. And he outlines what the elite are doing, and they're not playing by different rules, but they're making different decisions, and they're not... They know how to measure an investment and where to put their money. And he basically says there's people that think that they know where to put their money and they're quite happy themselves, and they say, oh, it doesn't apply to me. He said, you know, it doesn't apply to me that, because I've thought about this and I've done A, B, and C, but fundamentally there's fees everywhere through the whole system. And I know anytime I've spoken to anybody who has not read the book about this, the objection is quite significant. No, that'll never happen. You know, you don't understand. Like, no, because I only pay this much in fees. And they cannot hear that they've basically mastered a game. It's like learning a game that you can never win, but you don't realize you can never win. It's like mastering the rat race. Oh, I'm winning the rat race, but it's a rat race. And I've just learned I have to back out of some of these conversations because I also don't know it thoroughly enough to argue, which I don't want to argue.
I know. And this is the point for me, right? Is because I don't actually want to argue on those things. And the TED talk, what I did take away from it, right? She did, the presenter, I think it was Julia, mentioned that there's two types of individuals in her research that they could just kind of like, identified. One is there are two roles. One is the scout and one is the soldier. She was saying the soldier is the protector of an idea, and in the reaction is to go into battle and protect the idea and protect the belief system. And sometimes that's a good thing. But she said far and above, people that were what she would brand as the scout were much more grounded people and had much better outcomes. But in general, the scout was always curious. And so my issue was like, if I tie back, and this is where it's potentially offensive to some people, but to religion, was like, I don't see how I could be a scout in the world of the universe by saying, well, I'm a scout just in Christianity, right? Like, so for me, it's like I would brand myself as a scout in that world and be curious, but curious on everything and want to try to, I'm just like always trying to reconcile all of these things and not be something, but like I find it constantly frustrating that there's even labels on all of these things. Even atheism just frustrates me because I'm like, well, that's just another label. And I hear a lot of people that are atheists say, well, that's like, you can't be a non-astronomer. You're just not an astronomer. So you don't need to call somebody who's not an astronomer a non-astronomer. It's just labeling somebody for something they don't need to be. It's just, I'm not a religious person, but I also don't believe in God. But, I do happen to believe in God. I'm somewhere in the middle there. I just like, I don't have rules about it, right? It's just whatever you want to call it. So, but this is a fascinating topic for me, as I'm sure it is for many, many people. Yet for me to go down and talk with a lot of people that I run into who have a particular religious structure, their curiosity is just within that narrow area. I shouldn't use the word narrow because it may be the wrong word to use.
Let's say specialized area.
Right. And
yeah,
so...
So you can't have a discussion. All you can do... But it's like, honestly, Mick, what we're talking about there is like going to a book and wanting to have a discussion with a book. A book doesn't have a discussion with you. It just lays out its line of thinking. And then we pick it up as a scout and we pick out the bits we want and we ponder off someone else. Whereas, and maybe we write our own book. So I feel like some of these people that we're talking about having this conversation with, full on us to talk to to try to go into dialogue with a book and ask it to change the words on its page, because that's really what's happening. Unless they hit rock bottom, that's when it all changes. When someone has an experience where their line of thinking, they're confronted that their line of thinking does not work. It doesn't get them the outcome. But we hold on to that line of thinking for a long time, because some of the things you were talking about here what I call foundation beliefs, right? Where they're just they're the bedrock. They're the bedrock of everything that we think. You know, if you take the American History X thing, he fundamentally thinks that white people are awesome and everybody else is somehow a detriment to society. And everything is built around that. The prayer that he has, the rituals, what he does on the weekend, how he's tattooed his body, everything. So, you like you said, there's so much invested in that. And it's only once we get to a point of where we realize that doesn't work that we've got any interest in having a conversation with the scout.
Yeah. I think you're right. I'm wondering about what the like rock bottom though, like
well on that I've well
because I don't know if it is rock bottom, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I think I've witnessed many people that have been at rock bottom, and I see this on social media, and they tend to be more focused on their religious framework that to get them out of it, so to speak. And so I don't know that rock bottom is what takes them. There's something else. There's something else in to continue the religious framework. There's something else that causes somebody to go, this framework isn't what I thought it was anymore.
So we had an interesting conversation with Cam the other day, and he taught us loads about this, because we were discussing the 12 steps, because I'd Googled them, 12 steps for Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'd gone to a couple of meetings, and I knew that Cam knows quite a few people in that community. So I called him. I was like, Cam, explain this first one to me. Actually, it wasn't the first one, second or third. But anyway, I had a conversation. He was able to bring a lot more light to it than I was. And he said, the first one is, just from what I've Googled here, is we admit we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Now, if that's the first step, that's a pretty big call, because they're changing a belief on a fundamental thing in their life, which is alcohol. But I thought, like, this word unmanageable. And we were discussing how in our community, in every community, there's alcoholics everywhere. It's extraordinary how many people are dealing with some level of addiction, and there's like these sub-communities. They all gather morning, lunchtimes, evenings. It's just remarkable. And outside of that community, people like you and I, referred to as norms. You know, we're normal people. And we were having a discussion about, well, if someone is alcoholic and they hit rock bottom and basically something happens, like they crash their car or they miss their child's recital or something, and it's a wake-up call. It's like, oh, my God, you know. What happens to the rest of us? What happens to a normal person if our life is probably going to be less destructive than that, really? And that's brought us to the conversation about workaholics, which by chance, then I listened to a podcast about 3 days later, and then Tim Ferriss is interviewing a guy that's gone to Alcoholics Anonymous, Workaholics Anonymous. I was like, holy geez, this is all falling into place. But one of the things he was saying was that really for us regular Joes, unmanageable is sort of when we become obsessed. Yeah, it was an interesting conversation where obsession is the sign of unmanageable, because when something is at ease, there's no need for obsession. So when someone hasn't called you back and you've got a great relationship with them, yeah, it's like, oh, I'm sure they'll call me. when the relationship's thin, especially new and say romantic, you're checking your phone every 3 minutes. Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And there's this, oh my God, I haven't called you. And it's, and so our way of thinking in that state is actually unmanageable, because if you keep doing that, you're just going to send yourself bloody crazy. And, you know, the character in American History X too, it's like, I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep doing this until, you know, it keeps getting worse and worse. So I think the words that are interesting to discuss then, if we're not going to hit rock bottom, is this idea that we get to a point where it's unmanageable or obsessed. And I don't think they're great black and white answers, but I'm just patching this conversation into a conversation we had the other day.
Yeah, and see, some of these things, there's negative and positive obsession. And I think what I sometimes am talking about here is many of these things are what we would internally think of as positive obsessions, a positive business opportunity, a positive impact on the community because of an event or something that is perceived as a good outcome. Religion, where, you know, you're part of a community and you're doing good in the community, and it's all about trying to be a better person, and you can be obsessed with that. And potentially in any of those particular examples, be missing out on other stuff.
Yeah, be blind, yeah.
That's going on. Because you adopt this framework that stops you seeking the other things that are around.
So with the workaholics interview, he was saying that what the attraction to work was for people is that they were so successful there that, hey, I've got a funny situation. There's a car with a smashed, broken back window. He's just doing laps around the street. It drives past every 2 minutes. Now, I don't live in an area where you just do what we call chap laps, right? You know, Chapel Street's the cool place, you know. But this car keeps going past and it keeps distracting me because I don't know if it maybe doesn't have brakes. Maybe it's a scene out of like Speed. It's just got to keep going. maybe it's lost, or maybe it's trying to run in the engine, or maybe it's, you know, it's dodgy. Maybe someone's, you know, there's someone on drugs in the week. I don't know. Yeah, that was the interlude. It's a crappy old thing anyway. So one of the things saying about workaholics is that they fundamentally are very successful, and it's a thing that they can come back to because when they're at work, they've got a level of control. They know that they can take an action and get an output, and they've consistently always been able to take on more. Someone says, you know, here's another task, and because they're so capable, yes, I'm going to do more and more and more and more. But they fundamentally keep coming back to this and perhaps don't have the capacity to wind down, do nothing, be available to people in a different capacity. And it all goes way out of balance. But he was really talking about the sense of control that we had there. We understood the playing field. And I think when I've journeyed people from one line of thinking to another, I think a little bit of it, like an evacuation plan. If I say to you, we're on a sinking raft or in a crappy little boat in the middle of the ocean, and I say, hey, jump on this raft. Obviously, you want to know, okay, well, if I jump on the raft, what's the plan after that? So I can say, oh, well, it's got a motor on it. Oh, well, where do you know where to go? And you go, we've got a compass. Huh. But where would you go next? Oh, we've got a map and, you know, this particular beach is X kilometres away. Have you got enough fuel to get there? Yeah. How much space is there? Who's in charge? And I want to know, really, is this a well thought through decision? What happens with the foundation belief is there is such fear in letting go of one idea, because if we let go of that, there's this massive cascade of uncertainty on so many different other elements. And I actually went through it this week. I was hanging out with Cam and I was saying the vision of what I want to build next year. So most of my work is for private enterprise, but I really want to escalate the public courses I run. And he was saying, you know, with this Livermore event, you know, which is turning into a great event to start to find his identity. It's really fun and, you know, it's a game changer for people. It's really awesome. And he was saying, you need to give it away for free. You need to let everybody come for free to market. And I was like, no. I don't like that. And I was having this battle, which is pretty much what you're talking about. Well, hang on, do I do that? That doesn't seem right. But I also want to be open-minded to it because Cam's a smart cookie. And it didn't feel right. It didn't feel right at all. But I was still trying to be open. And as I thought about why, I started to go through those steps and I realized that the first experience I had was my brain just went, it was almost like a state of overwhelm because if I made that change, it would change everything. One, this is a highly valuable course. Two, a lot of people have paid. What happens to all these other people, you know, that have already paid and then they hear everyone else getting it free? That makes no sense. Four, if I put them for free, I'd go backwards because there's cost involved. And then five, that makes no sense because it's so far up. There's all these other issues, right? And I said, no, that doesn't work. But I was looking at a thought, mate, because I've never really been a big one. Like, you know, in my industry, everybody puts on these 2-day seminars and they go for infinite number of hours and they're going to sell to you like crazy. And they're still really good fun. They're fantastic. They're bloody valuable. You get loads out of it. And some are awesome and, you know, some are a bit average. But I was also being challenged on my identity. I don't like being associated with the charlatan that's is going to charge you $10,000 because they charge $100,000 a year. And I'm like, well, and even Cam pointed out, he's like, Dobbo, you know, people just don't have a lineup of people that have advised like you do, yet, you know, they're out there pretending they charge $100,000 a year or something. So, but I was like, I don't want to be attached to that. And so I was funny watching, observing myself be confronted with Cam coming in saying, I think you need to do this for free. Now, I don't know if he was right or wrong. As it journeyed, I said to him, everything's solvable here, but I really needed to verbalize my thoughts. But what about this? But what about this? But what about this? And as I verbalized it, there was some that I thought, oh, I could solve that later, but there's others I needed to have a proper discussion around. Because then he said, oh, by the way, your next event's in May. Why don't you bring it into November? And I'm like, holy geez. Like, when you change your calendar like that for a big event, it just... And my brain's going nuts. But I'm also trying to be open-minded because I really respect Cam's insight. And also, I want to do something new that is going to require a different line of thinking. So, in the end, we realized that it wasn't that Livermore is a standalone. It's absolutely worth it. It's great value for money. But also, that's not what has to happen here. A new element had to come into play. A new element was we'll do this huge one-day event in November, open primarily for our networks, so listeners for this show, et cetera. And I could accept that it wasn't going to be 2 days like the rest of the world. So I'm just going to show people and give something high value for a day. And it can be in November, but everything else stays. And because it's that was good. That's fundamentally good. But I went on this journey of, oh, what's trash? What's got to be moved and what new has to come in? On this particular occasion, it was finding something new that came in. And then we decided to make Livermore actually not a 2-day program, but 3 or 4-day program. So, you know, but it was just like my head for this 45 minutes was just all messed up. It was awesome fun.
It's funny because I remember before you did Livermore, quite a couple of months before you did it, we were on the phone one day. I was driving north out of New York City. I just remember it was late at night. We were just chatting on the phone. And you were saying, oh, I'm skipping out in about an hour and a half to go meet ML. And we're going to chat. And we were going to be exploring a couple ideas on Livermore, I think. And I remember saying, like, I'm not saying to you that you shouldn't do it. But last year you told me, like, there's a couple of things we talked about that I was like, asking you, like, I think you should do it, but I think you should also pay attention to the feeling you've got while you're exploring the discussions to make sure that it feels like it's something you should continue with and just keep checking in to see if it's worth doing. Do you know what I mean? Because I didn't have a feeling one way or another. Because at the time, at that exact moment, it seemed like you had a lot going on in your life at the time. Because you were also, I think, just off the back end of the wedding, and you had other stuff going on as well with work. And it was like, is this too much? And is it really worth it? Is, you know, like, is it better to delay it and push it out, or maybe not do it at all, or just stop doing it? Is this like, and those are the things that I think are healthy questions and good things for us to, and you're good at asking me the same things too. And sometimes I don't feel like those questions are really there. In a lot of circumstances, they don't get asked between friends in communities where people say, are we really doing not the right thing? Because to me, there's no right or wrong. It's just, does this, I don't want to say bring me joy either, because it can bring you joy. It's just about like, am I really experiencing the whole idea of myself through this, I guess. But
you're right about the feeling. Because at the start of the year, when I was, yeah, you're right, when we had that conversation, there's just too much going on. And even Lidmore was really fun this year. It was a small group, but it was really fun. But that being said, it was not my vision, because I just fundamentally couldn't resource it. And a few people called me out and just said, Dobson, I thought this was happening. And the truth is, the reason I ran that program and did a few other things this year, which I couldn't do at my best, was because I said I would, and I do my best to do what I say I'm going to do, which is difficult because sometimes you have to say, oh, I can't do that. You know, I need to pull the plug on that. So, but I look back and the feeling was really one of, say, obligation. And it's a fine line between when am I obliged and I should stop, and when is it worth pushing through because there's some other reward? Now, there was quite a bit of reward in this one that I did not see coming. It might be best not to just talk about all of that stuff, but just, you know, because it just involves so many other people and I prefer to just, but there was some major growth, some incredible relationships, some connections, and that kind of fact. Now I'm thinking about it. There's different ways to judge a course. You can judge a course by the number of people in the room, how much money it makes, content quality compared to, you know, global scale, how many new opportunities come out, how many connections are made between the room, how much growth an individual has, what the ripple effects are in your community. You know, there's just so many ones. Well, I look back and, you know, the area of growth was the people in the room just, you know, there was just people grew and they made changes and it was awesome. So, and I always feel so good about that. But that being said, since then, after that, when I had that conversation with Cam, at the end of that conversation, I felt exhilarated because I could see how I could build what I actually want to build. It was a completely different feeling. And about 2 weeks earlier, I'd had a similar conversation with Dave about some things and had this similar feeling. And it was a massive wake-up call to say, Dobbo, this is what you're hunting. This is the feeling. And if it's not out of this feeling, you need to be aware that it's not that feeling and be taking action to find that feeling. So my new card that I got stuck up on the shower at the moment is find an enjoyable path. You know, but I do think it's a cycle that I don't think, you know, it'd be great if you're always on that momentum where you're always feeling that. Cause I bet it would have been a long time since I could see what the enjoyable path was. But I'll tell you what, fundamentally what's changed it actually is having more people involved in the project, because when I bring more and more people involved, and basically there's a lot of community, like I did a talk 2 days ago and this kid comes up and she was on Aspire 20 years ago and she's now not a kid, she's a teacher, and she's like, I remember that, and she started listing all the content that she heard on the program. And so there's a big community now, and the more I get these people involved again, the more ideas you hear, and then the more, you know, I'm finding at the moment, the better I'm getting at letting go of how I thought it would be done and hearing what someone else's view is and putting it into the mix. It's been a pretty that's been pretty significant. And if you think about, say, a religion or a footy club, yeah, but those two are the easy ones. They've got a line of thinking, and everybody in that room fundamentally thinks the same way. Where on that particular, the thing that brings them together, they think the same way on.
Yeah, and this is what's interesting, right? Is because if you're a passionate Collingwood supporter, and so there's a particular feeling, there's a particular, all these things maybe that happen when you're watching Collingwood and thinking about it and blah, blah, blah. But then if you go to a Melbourne St. Kilda game and you're watching it, naturally, as the course of the game develops, even if you don't have a side you're going for, you end up barracking for a side. You're hoping somebody wins. Now, if it's all about statistics, it may be just about the team that, you know, allows your other team to go another notch up on the ladder. But if all of those things aside, there's an emotional thing that happens too, where you associate yourself most closely with the group of people that you side with. And so my contention is being like, if I removed myself out of like, you know, what a religion, for example, for long enough and associated with some completely different place where none of my tribe are and soak myself in that long enough, if I soak myself in it long enough, I will begin to identify likenesses and begin to work into those likenesses. And if I do that for long enough, I may build a life around it. And if it's important enough for me, which I think is really an important indicator, like it may not be an area of life that's important enough for me to invest in, but if it is one, then I may get so heavily invested that I won't retract back out of it. And there may be no convincing me. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. Certainly there's a lot of stuff in the world that's as a result of people's heavy disagreements on topics, right? I mean, religion and politics are the two greatest ones, but I just find it interesting that even what I would consider to be obvious facts for some people, like politics, I feel like I've like lost a solid understanding of the different parties in Australia, because they seem like there's a Liberal Party that tends to represent the free market and what would be mostly Republican ideas, yet they're called the Liberal Party. And I don't know if that's a fact or not, but I'm all, like, if people ask me, well, how do the party systems work in Australia? It's like, you know, I'm not even sure, because I had this, there was this John Howard guy that was part of the Liberal Party, and he, you know, they were more about like getting government out of the way and the free market, yet they were all about, you know, helping with the gun control issue. And like, there's this mesh of ideas. And I was like, you know what, if you're from America and you are like a full-on Republican and you moved to Australia and spent enough time in Australia, eventually you would have to side with a party if you're that passionate about politics. And eventually you would find that there's particular things in that party that are in the Democratic Party in America, but in your party in Australia, they're part of your party. And all of a sudden you're defending those ideas. As what is like, wow, like people just, they marry to just the party, just the whole idea of it. And it's like, how do all of these particular, like, why is it that this particular thing over here is an issue that Republicans stand for and Democrats don't, and vice versa in the US? Like, I have no idea. And I don't know why that it is the way that it is in England or Australia. But the mere fact that we just don't ask those questions, that we just go, oh, I'm a Republican or I'm not, is interesting to me.
I think, like, because we voted just here recently, and Bryna's from Ireland and she was working, I think she's been here for 10 years, but she, I'm not sure how long she's been able to vote for, last four or something. But we were both finding it very difficult to assess who to vote for. And she said, when I read the people's say, core purpose principles, you know, the fundamental beliefs are, you know, I side with this party. But I see the decisions that have been made and they seem like they should fit the other party, right? It's an absolute blur. And I think people are actually quite... It actually suits a brand to spin a story. This is our story. And we want you to buy into our story, but that's not necessarily how we roll. And people just want to drink the Kool-Aid. They want to buy the story. So I know a company that is all about the branding is around healthy and organic, and you know, all these paper, all their products have got these recycled paper bags and, you know, like, you know, packaging. But as a company, they don't do any recycling. They just throw it all out. And, you know, lots of, you can, it's pretty not hard to go to the other back and just see how they're handling their trash. And really, they're just selling a story they want everybody to buy into. And they just realize that people will like this story. So we'll just package it so they like the story. But that's not really how we're going to roll, because we've got a different agenda. And that is to make money. And we're just going to make money in this industry and sell a story that everybody likes. And I think there's a lot of that stuff going on. So as soon as you become a scout and say, hang on, I'm not sure if this is a real story, if this is really congruent, then a person who is pro this party has to then come up with an explanation that counteracts their vulnerability so they can hold their position, because they don't want to be wrong, because their whole house of cards comes down. And what I've learnt tends to happen in a significant belief system, say a religion, a footy club, a group that does, say, network marketing, where they, you know, they sell to your friends, etc. There's a fundamental model that they use to keep you in the system. And that is that you get introduced to this idea. So in a religion, it's going to be God. And in politics, it's going to be a fundamental philosophy of how the country should run. And in something like a network marketing organization, it's going to be the idea of a freedom of lifestyle due to a business. So you get introduced to an idea. And then as part of that idea, they tell you what's key to making that work. Now, you're not going to succeed in all of these things. That's why you need them. So if I tell you, you know, what's key to do this is to be able to sell on, you know, to be able to convert your friends. And so you're like, yeah, I want the idea. I'll need to convert my friends. Right? As a result, you've got a list of things that you need to do and don't. You go out and you fail in quite a few of them. And as a result, guilt builds up. So they say, what's, you know, when you're in guilt, especially religion, if you feel guilt, you feel bad, you failed, you've done the wrong thing, what should you do? You should go back to ask God's forgiveness, right? Or if I've failed and I haven't managed to convert a friend, or I started to cheer for another team that I hate, then the colleagues say, hey, come back to the fold, remember. And you come back to the fold, you come back to the idea, and it goes around full circle. And you just stay in there forever. And so friends years ago said, she was in a relationship where she got married young, and they were in a religious group. And she said back then the model was that if you're in a relationship, you got married. She said, what we really should have done, I think I might talk about this another time, but what we really should have done is gone on a date and watched a movie, but we got married. And she said that her husband had been watching porn. And as a result, he was heavily into the church, but he felt so bad and guilty, he'd go back to the church, and the church would tell him how wrong that was. And there's a saying, what you resist persists. And yet he would go back and make the sin again and go around full circle. And it actually created an addiction. Now, some people would say, well, that didn't create the addiction. There's some other issues at play. But fundamentally, if you say to a kid, don't eat any chocolate, they want another piece. But if you just give it to them, pack and gorge them, and it's like the cigarette example, isn't it? You know, all right, we'll smoke 10 packets. Do you want a cigarette now? I don't want to smoke any more cigarettes. you know, by making these things wrong, they actually created a problem. You know, it's a self-fulfilling thought cycle. Like, it's a trap. It just keeps you in it.
If we're truthful about it, I really feel like there's some sensitive areas around all these types of things, whether it's something you're heavily invested in with business or a football team or religion. When you strike at a weak point where somebody really does know it's a weak point, that's when I feel like some of the viciousness or the heavy reaction or the quiet, like, shutdown.
Or the character assassination. Shoot the messenger.
Right, can take place. And this is the point where I'm seeing the TED Talk. It was like the scout is like, oh, that's interesting. Like, that's the reaction. It's not. It's like a celebration of finding something that's inconsistent, because that means I'm going to learn something new. And so an example of that that I've had in the world of religion, I started to observe many, and look, I was brought up in Christian schools, Catholic schools, my whole life. I think you were probably too. So I did religion every day of my life for 13 years. It doesn't mean I'm an expert on it, but I drank the Kool-Aid. I understand the discussion. And so I started listening to a lot of, like, debates between people that had opposing views in all kinds of different religions, because I just found it really healthy and interesting to really hear different ideas. And the more I did that, the more I started to see this pattern emerging with Christians, mostly in these debates, that were debating, say, an atheist. And the discussion of, like, proving God existed or not would come up, and this whole discussion of the nature of the universe and, like, you know, the Big Bang and all of these things. And so I would hear some of these people talking about, like, their idea of how all of that worked, and at the beginning of all of that, there had to be a God. And so they would talk for 5 or 10 minutes about this, the fact that they would acknowledge that, yeah, science has taught us all of these things, but still there was a God at the beginning of it. It's like, well, I have no issue with that. But if you're admitting that and you're talking about that in an open way, you're sort of like, you're venturing to the point where you're clearly not believing the story of Adam and Eve anymore. And so that's okay. But if you drop the idea of Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden and that story of creation, then that means that the whole rest in the world of Christianity, the whole rest of the story becomes invalidated, because there's no need to be saved from anything in the world of Christianity, for example. And to bring that up with a few people that I've brought it up with has either been met with silence or resistance, or, and I was like, I'm not trying to convince you of something different. I'm just genuinely curious how you get your head around this, because I can't. Explain
it. And basically they freeze because they don't, and they've been turning a blind eye to it, because it's easier than to look at this gaping hole in the
plane of thinking. I'm not trying to say to you, I think you're wrong, although I do, but I'm not trying to pull you away. I'm just genuinely curious so I can learn what it is you're thinking, because maybe there's a way you're going at this that I haven't thought about, that I'm not looking to re-sign up and go, yeah, I'm back on board. I'm just trying to look, you know, dig in further, because nobody's talking about this. No one's talking about, like, how are we going to resolve this question? Like, nobody does talk about that in the world of religion. Okay, we've got two things that don't add up here. So let's, as a group in our Bible study, for example, or our, you know, whatever, in our football team, whatever, our post-match, blah, blah, blah. We don't address the core things that are really staring us right in the face. And so
there is a book on it. Years ago, a friend of mine, I had one of these conversations where I said, it just doesn't add up. And she thought I was a bit lost, but I was exploring. I was trying to work out, is there a God if my, you know, child dies and not baptized? They really go to hell, all those sorts of things, trying to work it out. And she gave me a book, and it's called It Makes Sense. And I didn't read it. Yeah, it was unsolicited. She just gives me this book, and I think I had a flick. Like, I got the gist, and also we sat and discussed at length, but basically this book was deliberately saying, was making an argument for all those sorts of questions. You know, if this...
Well, this is right. Because of that. Exactly, yeah. Right? It's like, that's what I feel like I run into, is like, it's more of a book of like, here's how to answer these questions. It's like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. Like, when I bring it up, I'm not asking for your answer. I'm asking, how do you address this inconsistency in the fact that you're thinking there's this massive potential in your business and there's no revenue? Like, how are you reconciling that?
You know what's really challenging there? Because when you do that, the business is a really good example. When you're scared, because if you really stop them and say, wait, if you do this, will this work? If you pedal that hard, if your business is running at its maximum, will it make enough money? And there can be this almost tears where they stop and they have to be confronted by the fact that the answer is no, it's not going to. But then they've got a new problem, which is, oh my God, this doesn't work. So now my motive is dead. I'm done. I'm in tears. I can't even see, you know, I've built something that's not even valuable, and I've invested money in it and time and pride. And the expression I use, I say, I always feel like I shot Bambi, because they're just now devastated. And it's mean. If you're doing it just so you feel right and you want to tell someone they're stupid, which, you know, we've all seen that conversation where, well, that's bloody stupid, you don't want to do it. That's no good. But if you really care about someone, you'd sort of do want to just grab them and go, wait, let's think this through. So, you know, I get my timing right on that sort of stuff, and you know, I try to. You know, I'm sure I've cocked that up many a time. I'm sure there's people out there that think I'm an asshole because it's got me timing wrong. But, you know, you're trying to do it well, but you don't want to have someone's world come crashing down. But the truth is, it has to for a little while. So for me, the other day when Cam was talking to me, for 45 minutes there, maybe an hour, which doesn't sound like very long, but my brain was fried. It was like it was rewiring. It was questioning everything. It was because I was looking, oh my God, I've built this. It's going really, it goes awesome and it's fantastic. And we've been doing it for years now. And people, and you're saying, hang on, what changed it? Like, it was this, you know, it was literally like my brain was rewiring. And I've had the conversation with many people who run businesses, and I've had to tell them this doesn't add up. And one time a guy stormed out. I said to him, who are your customers? And he says, entrepreneurs like me. And I said, are you making any money right now? And he said, no. And I said, well, what do you think you're selling? He says, I'm going to help them. I'm going to mentor them. And I said, all right. Have you hired a mentor? No, because this was a free breakfast. I said, hang on, but you want to help people just like you? He goes, yeah, all these people that are starting these businesses, I want to be involved with that. Oh, great. But so who's the customer? And he said, well, it's people like me. I go, but you don't, it can't be just like you. Like, it was this, it was a business model that fundamentally didn't work. I don't remember all the details of it, so there's gaps in what I'm saying. And everybody in the room was, you know, around this breakfast table starting to look and say, this doesn't add up at all. Because I was basically saying, you've got to solve a problem. You've got to be able to charge a fee, and then it's a business. And in the end, he just stood up and said, no, you guys, you just don't get me. You don't understand. And just left. And the truth was that he was a very spiritually connected guy, and he loved the personal development, self-help industry. And he was so charging in that direction, he was probably making those conclusions, you know, do what you love and the money follows. But they're massive leaps of faith.
Yeah. And, you know, to take business as the example.
Oh, I lost you there.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I lost you for a second. You said, you know, oh, here comes the dump truck. Listeners, you're about to hear the dump truck. I'm in the noisy room today too. So, you know, it's all right. I've got to run.
Is the guy with the broken window? Is he gone?
Thank you. Hi, Mick. I'm back.
So I was just going to say about
So yep. The truck just picked up the car with a broken window and put it in the back. Sorry, go on.
Business, you know, in some ways I sort of feel like when I think about people who are what you might consider to be a successful business person, it seems as though the more successful they are, of course I hate that word successful, but you know what I mean, the less emotionally connected they are to what they're involved in, because they've either been burnt so many times or they've just learned. And I always thought, even though I haven't done really gotten into the world of real estate investing, I'd happily do it. And I'm just aware of the fact that you can't get emotionally connected to the house you're walking through. And like, it's okay to maybe do that and fall in love with the house you want to live in, but to do that in something you're going to invest in is really dangerous, because you can fall in love with this idea of something you could create and the numbers just don't work. And you're stuck in this thing. And the same thing can happen in business. And the more somebody is investing in real estate, I think the better they get at that. They realize where the numbers work and where they don't. And they don't emotionally fall in love with this idea of this dilapidated property that they could turn into this amazing new pub or apartment building, because they understand the emotional drain it's going to take to get through the project they're looking at in front of. They know what is involved and they know how to stay at arm's length of that. And
but because it's fundamentally a dollar decision.
Yeah, that's right.
I can buy it at this, I'll inject this, I sell it at that, done. And it's not emotive. So it's very mathematical. It's just, it's calculated. It's objective.
I mean, it's just data, really. Yes. But it, and I don't know how you reconcile that with something that's much more charged, like politics or religion. But at the end of the day, perhaps what we really are saying is like the key is to stay at arm's length and like explore and understand all of these things, but not be those things and be in it so heavily. So
that's an interesting question then, right? Because if we say be at arm's length and not be in it so heavily, yet this is our life, we're living it, and this is our worldview we're talking about, not a business, then there has to be a fundamentally different belief in the scout and the soldier.
I would agree.
There has to be something that you and I think that allows us to explore and be curious, as if we find something that's uncertain,
there's got to be something
not going to threaten us.
Somebody that would listen to this, that would be maybe heavily aligned with a religion, for example, that says, "Yeah, but if you are at arm's length, you're not fully committed, and you're not fully not fully committed, but just like you're not really getting the value. You're not invested enough to really get the true potential and benefit and possibility of what's there." And that's
not really what I'm saying. No, like, because that's what goes right back to the start, where it says, well, if you switch from Collingwood to GWS, you can't really have ever been a Collingwood supporter. And so, but I'm not sort of saying that. I'm saying it's like the soldier and the scout have a fundamental different core belief. It's like the soldier says, I invest my certainty in this story that someone tells me, where the scout says, I write the story or something, right? Or I'll discover the story. But why is it that the scout in their heart isn't scared of the uncertainty or is comfortable to explore it? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's got to be some different. If I'm attached to a political party, a football team, a business idea, or religion, if I'm really attached to it, there must be a reason why I can't let go of that. Where the scout says, I'm curious, maybe this is not the way. They must be invested somewhere else. They must have some level of, is it a a personal confidence, or like a business bank, they might already have enough money in the bank so they can say, oh, I don't need that idea. Is it their identity is already assured, so they're not really worried about these things? Like, it could be lots, but there's got to be there's a fundamental different line of thinking between those two.
I agree. I have often found myself wondering whether or not are these just, am I a soldier in some areas and a scout in others, or am I just generally a scout or a soldier? Because I feel like I run into people that are just one or the other. There's people I feel like sometimes I just can't even be around or engage with or even just relax around, because it feels like everything they're a soldier in. And I'm just like, I'm curious. I'm curious about health, but I don't need you to tell me why I'm going to get cancer and how I need to like build muscle or what I should be doing about exercise. Like, I'm just curious about all of it. And I'm curious about the inconsistencies and I want to explore them, but I'm not going to go nuts on them. And I'm not going to just stop at one documentary and go, that's it. You know, that's everything there is to know. But I'll like soak into that one thing and like absorb it and think about it and test it and then try to move on to something a little more. But, you know, that world for me is not, that's not, I'm not like somebody that's super, super invested in the world of health and fitness. I don't make my living there. I don't like read books. I'm not a fanatic about it. I'm just genuinely interested in it. And so I try to look for areas where am I like emotionally connected to an idea. I don't know if there's areas that I am other than my role, industry, if you want to call it that, like that the story I tell myself about what I'm good at and what I should do and what I should work on, that the fact that I'm working in the world of energy and I'm pushing forward in those areas and not doing it in, say, I don't know, making
bread.
Like I could be a baker. I could be a great baker. I've never explored that. I've never opened that idea to myself.
See, that takes you down another deeper question, because that's about, you know, who are we and what are we on the planet for, and what do we need to question, what doesn't need to be questioned.
Exactly. And so that gets me off course, and I'm aware of that, because it's like, well, that's not a belief system, right? That's just a path. That's just a juncture point, and I'm choosing paths, and I'm aware of the fact that I'm on an enjoyable path that I'm happy with. So that's not really a belief system so much. But I do wonder about it. It's like, am I a scout in some areas and a soldier in others?
Because I think anybody, you know, would see themselves, you know, someone in religion would see themselves as a scout because they see themselves as a leader in their community, because they're leading an idea and a movement, which we are really too. We've got a different view to many politicians and business owners. But, you know, so I would hope that but I'm not always open-minded, because it's a difficult role as in my role, I'm a teacher. So I'm trying to listen for a truth, because it's really important to me that I teach something that is helpful, that is legitimately real, just not regurgitated idealism, which we've talked about before. But it is hard when you're in a teaching role, then you need to be a mentor, then you need to be a student.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, but, there's... there's always got to be a Rosa Parks in the world, right? Somebody that's willing to just not move to the back of the bus. And that to me is the soldier that's standing up for a cause and a purpose. And there's a time and a place where those things are just needed and appropriate, and they're not ill-founded. And then there's other, I've found myself observing in the political world, people that will start or try to start a movement. And I, for the life of me, I have noticed that I just can't see myself doing that. I was like, I wonder if there's something I would stand up for so heavily that I would want to just rally everyone I can to sign up. And I haven't hit that yet. I haven't hit that thing that, Because even to the cause of like education or something, yeah, I think we need to upheave our entire education system, but I don't have a model that I'm like, this is wrong and this is right. There's no one thing. So it's like, I've got nothing to march for except for we can do better.
Yeah. And sometimes that's your voice and role. There's some people that, it's like the Brexit thing. Guy pushes Brexit through, and as soon as it gets through, he's like, oh, I don't want to lead the change. You're like, oh, great. I said that to some people recently. They said, I think we're going to bring some people to your conference. And I said, oh, yeah, great. And I said, there's only one rule. Just don't bring boring people. They're like, what? And I go, well, if you don't like hanging out with them, don't make someone else sit next to them. maybe I won't invite so and so. I'm like, yeah, like
that's great. Geez. I love it.
Like, I like creating an environment where people want to hang out. And I'm all supportive of people that are a little bit quirky and stuff, like, but you know, seriously.
That's awesome. Well, I think the world's about to wake up to the stark reality of what happens when you get too committed to an idea. When we've got two presidential candidates here in the US, it's going to be a pretty interesting outcome to see what happens there.
Yeah, it makes me sad.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing just makes me sad. And I look at the political situation here, it's a joke.
I saw a meme the other day that said Donald Trump is a reminder to us all that maybe you really should go and apply for that job that you're not qualified for.
Jeez. It all just scares me. There's just crap everywhere. And, you know, there's so much stuff to, and you do, I think, you know, John Mayer says it, and he said, like, we're waiting for the world to change. And this generation is just staring at in disbelief because we don't feel like we don't march the same as, they did in different eras. We hop on social media and just forward, you know, things around, but half the stuff we're forwarding around isn't educated. You don't have to be diehard to forward something around. You have to be a bit more diehard to go to a march. But, you know, in the song, it's like we're all just waiting for the world to change and because we're just staring at it and saying this is a mess. I get quite despondent, actually, about some of the stuff I see going on. I think, God, left to our own devices. Us humans are, you know what the issue is? Violence will always get attention. And people who just don't feel fulfilled can always just be violent and they'll get attention and there'll be some other idiot that applauds
brings attention to it either way, whether it's violent words or violent actions, either way.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's easier to break and be destructive. It's easier to be divisive than inclusive. Really, it takes just no effort and you can feel powerful because you made a change without awareness of what's the result of that change and are you accountable for it. And it scares me, you know.
Yeah, it makes some people feel like they are a change agent.
Mm. Right. Especially when you listen to, when you study history and each time I go to a country, I try to get just a general gist of the history. Sometimes I'll get a book and just read it at length, and other times I'll just, you know, listen to a podcast or read some summaries or go to a museum that's going to give me a history before I start traveling around. And you just, you know, just history just repeats over and over and over. You know, you hope you're in a different age. So,
well, mate, you...
That's pretty optimistic. Yeah. Have a good day, everyone.
Well, mate,
be the change you want to see in the world, folks. Be the change you want to see in the world.
Yes. Well, you got a big Christmas to prepare for here. And hey, I'm going to take us out on a song. How's that?
What?
Yeah. Because I got this idea. I just brewed up this quick idea for your Christmas party. I think what you need to do is go out and find the wankiest Christmas sweater you can possibly get your hands on.
I own one.
Oh, great.
B gave me one for Christmas. And I love it. And it fits so well. And I love it. It's so warm. And yeah, we're totally wearing a bad jumper tomorrow.
That's good.
Well, I'll send you a photo. It'll end up on the webpage.
Well, the song I was thinking we should play at the end here is from the Hilltop Hoods, a Cosby sweater song.
Nice. I love this song.
So, segue, man, it is like, I love this song. Such a great beat, such a great tune. It's so fitting for your Cosby sweater tomorrow that you're going to be wearing for Christmas. So, I hope you have a good one, mate.
Cheers, mate. Talk to you later. See ya.
See ya, everybody. Enjoy.
Watch me do my thing, lost into my singing. Heart like New Orleans and Cosby crew and jeans. Yeah, not awake, sterile and vacant. Living in conditions of the modern matrix. Only bare rounds on a proper naked. Only point I made with the bullet was a paper. Ain't here to fight some dude to fuck a fan with a spouse. Rather light show me to burn it down with a house. Get your heart from the groove on account of the bounce. And the galacton cruise up or down on a couch. Status never mattered, ever acted with a luck. Christine Aguilera, just let yourself go. Matter pressure and ever that is better left. Pristine track a record to let you own the blow. The would-be king's even homeless. Loot of these kingdoms are unjust. Slap a rapper, lost a lynch, no. To the gathering that no and longer matter like a black good. Hole.
And it's all good. And it's all good. And it's all good.
I feel like Bobby Fischer. Always four moves ahead of my competition. Listen, they ain't gonna stop me ever. I feel as large as Biggie. Swear it could not get better. Wearing that Cosby sweater, wearing that Cosby sweater, wearing that Cosby sweater, wearing that Cosby sweater, wearing that Cosby sweater.
I'ma step up every chance when I rumble. The old call me champ, but the jungle is fitting. I'ma get drunk and dance like your uncle until I'm all hands like your uncle. I'm kidding. The venom is in venom. When I enter, then it's over. When I'm spinning venom, I'm as generous as Oprah. You get a scar, you get a scar, you get a scar. Me drunk in the back of a rental car. Pat Benatar, blood loves a battlefield. Here to get you where you see like a battle drill. I'm in the saddle still, a little saddle sore. Smash me out the stratosphere, flashy as a matador. When I'm dressed like Theo's dad in a Gucci, listening to Gucci rap. I won't beat around the bush like a 70s porn. I make you wish that you'd never been born. And it's all good.
And it's all good. And it's all good. And it's all good.
One, two, three. I feel like Bobby Fischer. Always four moves ahead of my competition. Listen, they ain't gonna stop me ever. I feel as large as Biggie. Swear it could not get better. I feel in charge like Biggie.
Out of this alley, we can fire up the nightlife, Prince Harry. Fuck the high life, we can vibe live. We can buy lines hanging from behind, I'm just married.
I'll turn the iPhone into a blood sport. I made pea soup out of a pea brain. They wanna run this youth slide park, or I'd rather run these tracks like a steam train. Like a steam train. Like a steam train.
You've been listening to Risking Failure. To join the community and access more free content, news, and updates, subscribe at riskingfailure.com.
Wearing that Cosby sweater.